Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And I really like Kristen Stewart's approach to it, and quite a few people who knew Diana said that it's quite a good, she kind of brought together some of the mannerisms and brought her to life in a way that they thought was quite impressive. But it's a very strange film, I think.
I mean, for one thing, the haircut that Diana has in 1991, according to this film, is significantly more flattering than the haircuts that people actually did have in 1991, if you actually look up pictures. So that's one element, you know, where it's not a complete snapshot.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Flicks Watch Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Rich.
Hey.
Kat.
Hey.
And Helen the Cat.
Hey.
We're going to be talking today about Spencer. Thank you always to the mighty people for their mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for editing this podcast and this episode in particular. Do remember to head over to Spotify and Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star rating and a glowing review, because it really helps us. And also, if you want to join the conversation, you can find us on Twitter at FlixWatcherPod or on Instagram at FlixWatcher.
Hello, film fans. Welcome to this episode of Flicks Watcher Podcast. Our guests today are Rich and Kat. Over to you, please, Kat, to say hello to our listeners and tell them a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Hi, I'm Kat Lowe. I'm the co-host of the Don't You Want Me podcast with Rich, who is with me tonight. And yeah, we do this pod about relationships in film, and it's about the most intriguing, relatable and dysfunctional ones. They can sometimes be romantic, they can sometimes be friendships, they can be toxic friendships, they could be all kinds of different people, different dynamics. And yeah, we've recently done Gregory's Girl, we did one on the Wham documentary that's on Netflix, and we did one on Broadcast News. Yeah, so it's all kinds of different things.
So I guess the one kind of documentary one is quite distinctive, isn't it? When you talk about bandmates, and there's quite a few relationships there. You got the Andrew Ridgeley and George Michael one, but they also have like the Pepsi and Shirley kind of vibe in there as well. How did that kind of play out in your episode of the podcast talking about it? Because I really like that one documentary.
Yeah, well, it was the first time we'd done a documentary on the podcast, okay. So it was quite new territory for us.
So this is real life you're talking about here. You're examining not just fictional characters.
Yeah, exactly. So it was quite a different sort of tone for us. And we really enjoyed it because it gave us that sort of opportunity to talk about a friendship where it manages to endure something really huge happening to the two people involved. And it's quite rare, really, in bands for there to be this massive trajectory, huge success, and for the people not to immediately fall out. And it was nice to examine such a positive friendship, wasn't it, Rich?
Yeah, and I think when you say about fictional characters, I guess George Michael in some ways was. And we got to learn a lot about his kind of friendship with Andrew as youngsters and as he changed from Yogg into George Michael and the big star that he ended up being. And yeah, seeing especially the kind of the way that he was looked back on, and in another way about how short-lived their fame as Wham really was. We kind of didn't realize, as at the real top, it was probably what, 3 years or so, and yeah, from there it was a whistle-stop tour, but a very enjoyable one.
I was always surprised that it did end on a friendship where the trajectory was so markedly different. And also George was at the start saying, well, Andrew was a better songwriter at the start, and then suddenly he wasn't. And then Andrew's like, I can't compete, mate, you go for it, have fun, I'm done. And it seemed like, wow, this is mature. I'm not sure how often you see that nowadays. But yeah, anyway, so it's good to you know, venturing into real life documentaries, guys. I'd love to hear more of it. But we're here talking today about Spencer. There's a few relationships in this specific film. I'm not talking about all the relationships in around this very, very famous person. But Rich, this is your choice of film. Can you tell us first of all why you chose it? And then give us the synopsis, if there is such a thing.
Well, I guess this was one of the, you know, growing up in the UK in the 90s, this was the big relationship, especially at the start. It was Charles and Diana. And I think this was set in the Christmas of 91, I believe. And seeing this kind of episode and this part of her life, obviously semi-fictionalized, you know, the real characters, and I haven't seen any of the other productions like that, but following the story that we know and the end of their relationship at Sandringham at Christmas, and then going into, you know, this tragedy that everyone knows about, which, you know, spoiler alert, but we do see really a portrayal we do see a portrayal of what we think the royal family may have been like at the time and the mental health struggles that she was going through that were very well documented before and after she died. And seeing really a version of events that saw her leaving the royal family, as it were, and you know, just that whole environment really is so alien to 99.999% of reality, let's be honest. And seeing this version of it was fascinating, and I'd never seen it before, and any excuse to spend Christmas with the royal family.
Helen, what are your thoughts? Are you, how much of a fan of the royal family or Diana in particular are you?
I've never watched The Crown, but I quite like Lady Diana's fashion, and I just remember her just being kind of everywhere. And when she passed away so very young, it was just the whole nation was in mourning. And there's been quite a few different interpretations of Diana recently, but I've seen this before and I really like Kristen Stewart's approach to it. And quite a few people who knew Diana said that it's quite a good, she kind of brought together some of the mannerisms and brought her to life in a way that they thought was quite impressive. But it's a very strange film, I think. I mean, the fact that it's got a score by Johnny Greenwood kind of sets you up from the start that I do enjoy it, but it's quite an unusual film. And I would say that it kind of almost is borderline a little bit of a horror film at times.
Yeah, Kat, you're nodding away to the horror film comment there.
Yeah, it reminded me a bit of Black Swan at some points, this film.
We didn't actually have a synopsis, but I guess...
I did wonder. Go on, I'd love to hear one.
Go on then. You got 60 seconds, Rich, starting from... now.
So this film follows the adventures of Princess Diana, the Princess of Wales. She spends Christmas 1991 with the royal family at the Sandringham estate. We see her arriving late and really already quite early on discovering the pressures that she's on to put on a particular show, the fitting in with the traditions around the British royal family, what's expected of their private and public persona, really from a semi-outsider point of view, how she fits in with the real expectations and the background side of the how the staff fit into this event. We talk about the bulimia struggles that she has, the whole concept of her, the relationship has broken down with Prince Charles, her and her children. And again, 25 plus years on, we see that still going on. And how she interacts with people on the estate.
Oh, time's over.
Oh, God, I couldn't stop.
This is Pablo Larraín film and following very closely, well, not time-wise, but very kind of similar kind of fashion to Jackie, which there's many, many parallels to draw with this. I guess based on both being based on real people, on real events, but also massively fictionalized as well. Have you guys seen Jackie? And I don't know, Pablo Larraín stuff in general. You haven't seen Jackie, no?
I saw Jackie at the cinema. I saw this one at the cinema as well. And I quite like the approach in this one of how it's not completely based in realism. I actually quite like how it sort of incorporates all of this, as Helen says, kind of elements of horror, elements of surrealism, because I think that when it involves some people who are still with us, there's something about the kind of idea of taking it out of kind of potential soap opera and bringing it into something that's, you know, a little bit more abstract, that is both kind of more interesting to watch, I think, from my point of view, but also maybe makes you feel less as if you're meant to be watching a documentary, which is kind of good. It's more about, you know, a person's sort of inner building hysteria rather than you thinking, oh yes, I'm watching exact footage of what went on. I mean, for one thing, the haircut that Diana has in 1991, according to this film, is significantly more flattering than the haircuts that people actually did have in 1991, if you actually look up pictures. So that's one element, you know, it's not a complete snapshot.
Yeah, I've seen Jackie. I was a bit lukewarm when I saw it first, so I think I'd definitely want to revisit it. And then I've also seen Emma, I don't know how you pronounce it, the other Pablo Larraín film with Gael García Bernal wearing little dungarees, which is like the main takeaway I got from that. So yeah, I think he's definitely got a very specific kind of approach to taking real life female stories and putting them on screen, which some people either really, really like or it kind of doesn't quite work for them, I think, from what I can tell by Letterboxd.
Are the ratings quite varied then?
Yeah, I think it's either people absolutely love it and think every shot is just so beautiful and the acting is just off the scale, or it's a bit boring and weird.
I think I'm on it's a bit boring. No, it's a bit weird. Not necessarily boring, but I have a fundamental challenge with these types of films where it is based on real people, but also there's no way we can possibly know what the actual story was that happened. So fundamentally, I'm kind of like, what's the point, in a way? That's why I'm not watching The Crown. Also because I'm not really that bothered about the royal family just in general, to want to watch series and series of their lives. But I'm kind of like, well, if this is all just going to be made up, I'm not sure what's to be gained from it exactly.
So do you always feel like that when you're watching historical drama?
Not necessarily, but I think it's when people are very much still alive and they're trying to piece together new stories that directly relate to things that have happened, and then they're trying to reconstruct the conversations that have happened based on these new stories. So I imagine that obviously Diana was in Sandringham that Christmas and things happened, but then we're kind of reconstructing all these conversations that happened, and you kind of think, I'm not sure why we're doing this exactly. But outside of that though, Kristen Stewart as Diana, thought, wow, actually, yeah, great. You did a bang-up job. I always, always, always love Sally Hawkins. I always, always, always love Sean Harris and Timothy Spall in this. I was like, I don't know if you're a goodie or a baddie, but I like the way you're presenting this kind of character. And on the other side, you have almost like arm's length, you have the Queen and Prince Charles. And I didn't look up who those actors were. Well, Prince Charles, sorry. But he was almost like off, almost like a blur in the distance. Like, not a motion blur, but just like that far away. We only kind of interacted with him when it became, we needed him to be in the fray for a bit, to be a bit of an idiot or a bit of a knobhead, and then kind of step away to show that Diana was the good one and he's the bad one, kind of way. So I found it interesting, but also there still was that lingering, do we need this? Do we need the story?
Do we need this? I mean, essentially, it's vibes for like 2 hours.
Yeah, it is.
Vibes.
It is.
Vibes,
it's a hang film, isn't it?
On things that may or may not be true, but have been kind of reported in interviews or by different kind of unofficial accounts over the years. So, like the weighing thing, and like having her outfits picked, and kind of piecing together like the real moments. So, from the public appearance at Christmas and the KFC story and all of those things.
So did the KFC story happen?
I took exception at that. Well, yeah, because did they have drive-through KFCs in 1991? I can't remember.
I took more exception to the cowboy nature of ordering KFCs. I didn't think it made any sense. Two lots of chicken. What? Which chicken? Like two lots.
That's someone who doesn't order at KFC going to KFC.
Exactly. Spencer. Sorry.
I do think it's a really, really beautiful film. The cinematography is by Claire Mathen, and I think that she worked on Portrait of a Lady on Fire as well, which is also a really beautiful
movie. That makes sense.
Movie. And the costumes are by Jacqueline Duran, who did Barbie, and also Atonement, in which Keira Knightley wears the most extraordinary green dress, which I think is one of the most amazing outfits in movies of the last 20 or so years. So you can really sort of see like the sort of stamp of like proper kind of artistic concentration on this film. I think it's really impressive in that way.
What did you make of the relationship she had with people downstairs, quote unquote, which kind of fed into the people upstairs? Because this to me was like almost, I mean, you talked about horror. I was thinking like Gaslight in the movie, wasn't it? It was like, there's a lot of, you can't do this, you must do this. And people knew what she was doing all the time. And she was, even, you know, she tried to expunged the foods by going to her kid's bedroom that time. Everyone knows what was going on there. And it was a really kind of creepy, horrible, gaslighty scenario, which I just felt really sorry for more than anything. That's probably one of the things that took me into. I just felt really, just really sorry for her.
Yeah, that constant feeling of surveillance and, as you say, a real strong sort of gaslight feeling of people continually telling her that everyone can see and hear everything, but also saying to her, don't see conspiracy everywhere, you know. Mm. I thought that was really quite a kind of haunting element of it all.
And the whole part of Sandringham felt to me a bit like the Overlook Hotel in The Shining, this kind of big, massive building with wings and rooms and this kind of creeping menace and everything. It did feel a bit like that. And part of her, say descent into madness, a bit like Jack Nicholson, was kind of slightly different because it was pretty much already there. And everything here we just see were various triggers. But that kind of element of Sally Hawkins being there, or is she? You know, this is Paddington's mum, or is she? We don't know. Was she real?
Don't play with Paddington's mum.
A lot of empathy because she was just complaining about how cold it was. And I was just thinking, I could just imagine like how cold it would be. And they wouldn't put the heating on either because they're tight royals and make everyone take extra blankets.
Yet she drove away with a convertible top down like the day after Christmas. It must have been fucking freezing.
Good point.
Yeah. Harry says, doesn't he? He goes, I'm cold, Mum. So apparently Diana favoured McDonald's over KFC. But there's no like truth that she did that on Christmas. It wouldn't even have been open.
I remember there being some sort of controversy that she took the kids to see, Patriot Games. So this would have been after this, probably a year or two afterwards. And she took without her police detail and just went, oh, we're just a normal family going off to the cinema. And I believe that, you know, because of the theme of Patriot Games as well, being around the IRA, it's like, oh, she's taking sides. And everything was a controversy. And they probably went to McDonald's then as well.
Is there anything else you want to say, guys, before we head to the scores?
I like that in that final scene, they're playing Mike and the Mechanics because Mike and the Mechanics is such a specific music choice from that moment in time. And I think kind of quite truthfully reflects elements of Diana that I think were quite uncool in a way that sometimes interpretations of her now tried to forget. Like, I think that Diana was a big fan of Christa Berg and stuff. Mm. You know, some of her music choices could sometimes be a little bit cheesy. So, I like that musical choice at the end there after all of that incredibly cool Johnny Greenwood stuff that you have early on. So, yeah, it's cool.
I haven't seen The Crown either, but I think I was kind of grateful that the head tilt, the head bob that she does to the camera, the very kind of Martin Bashir interview era stuff. I mean, I always saw that as a kind of, it looked more like a Dr. Evil kind of thing. Like, look at my head tilt. Ooh. But it wasn't overdone to the extent, I think because I've seen stuff around The Crown, but I think the performance of Kirsten Stewart was, it did seem to convey a lot of different emotions and the various issues she was going through. And I think it could have very, very easily been done as a caricature. And I think because of, I think the clip of The Crown I did see where it was that kind of, look at my face. And she's managed to avoid that, although the Sally Hawkins element to it and the whole Anne Boleyn callbacks, if you can call it a callback.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a very kind of interesting and odd and surreal way it went down. It's just, as you say, it's horror, but with almost a bit of time travel there too.
I just wanted to say that while I was like looking to see whether she really ate KFC, if you type, did Diana really eat? One of the things that comes up is pearls that, I mean, we're kind of like watching it and we're obviously interpreting like it's completely fictional and that the eating of the pearls is a decline of her mental health and her battles with bulimia and that. But the fact that this kind of storytelling is based on real people and that people watching it feel the need to Google if she really ate pearls is kind of like creating a slightly surreal kind of world of film conversation and people not being able to kind of take apart real situations and real people and having kind of an interpretation of an artist. So yeah, I just thought it was funny that there are people out there who were questioning whether Diana really ate a pearl necklace.
Did she?
She did not. In case you were wondering.
Well, let's head to the scores, guys.
I'm Sam Clements, host of the 90 Minutes or Less Film Festival, another podcast in the Stripped Media family, a podcast that celebrates movies under 90 minutes long. Each episode, I'm joined by a special guest who selects a movie to join our prestigious lineup. Past guests have included fellow Stripped Media family members Martin and Sam from Song by Song, and Kobe from Flixwatcher, and Dave from The Wire Stripped. Search for us now on the app you're currently listening to this podcast, or join us at 90minfilmfest.com.
So welcome to our Flixwatcher scores. They are always out of five. You can have decimal places if you wish, and we will start with you, please, Rich, with your recommendability.
I'd say a four, I think, because it's such a strange blend of films. I think it's something that I would suggest that people watch. I think, like you said at the beginning, they may not necessarily enjoy it. They may sit in one extreme or the other, but I think it's something that it's actually an interesting watch, and I definitely recommend that people go and watch it.
Kat?
Yeah, I think I'd give it a four as well. I think that, as I say, it's a very beautiful film in terms of how it looks, and that's quite rare these days with movies, I think. And I like how much space there is in it. I like how sort of cold it is. It sort of opens with that incredibly sort of frosty grass. I love all of that. And yeah, I like the way the music is used in it. It reminds me a bit of Punch Drunk Love, the Paul Thomas Anderson film, in that way. So yeah, I definitely give it a four.
Helen?
Yeah, I mean, I do really like it as a film. I think the score is amazing. I love Johnny Greenwood's scores, and I think Kristen Stewart is so good in this. But I think it's a bit of a tricky one to recommend because it is a lot of vibes. And at the end, like, you don't really kind of learn that much. Well, maybe you learn whether she likes McDonald's or KFC. I don't know. It's not.
Or not.
It isn't a documentary, and it isn't trying to be in that way. It's just kind of an interpretation of how she may or may not have been feeling at the time. So I'm going to give it a 3.8, even though I am quite a big fan of it.
I'm going to give it 3.4, I think. I think it's an interesting piece, and I'm not the biggest, I don't know how to say this without sounding callous, I'm not that fussed about royalty, but Diana, in that pyramid of royalty, is like, she's obviously the pinnacle. She's the one that brought down barriers for people HIV/AIDS. She championed all these charities. She was in a system which was kind of against her, and try to fight against it and rally against it. So she's, if this was Charles, the film, I would not be even slightly entertaining this, but the fact it's Diana, I think Kirsten Stewart does a fantastic job portraying her, even though she's not, doesn't really look like Diana, but the mannerisms and the intonations and how she just walk, you know, everything about her, I think is great. But the fundamental kind of story behind it, I'm not that fussed about. I'd recommend it to a lot of the Crown fans, I guess. So yeah, 3.4. Yeah, repeat viewing score. Rich?
I'll say 1.5. You kind of know what happens anyway, and I think any of the surprising twists and turns and the way it ends, once you've seen it, I honestly don't think I could go back and watch it again, because while it's a very interesting first-time watch, I think, and again, not really a royalist fan and really into that kind of thing, I honestly don't think, other than if there was a very condensed version of it, it's one of those films that you could make like a 25-30 minute version of, would actually be quite enjoyable. But I think after you get about halfway in, or even half an hour in, you kind of think, oh, okay, it's just more of this. So I think, yeah, I've seen it now, and it's on my letterbox as I've seen it, so yeah, I'm happy. 1.5.
You can't get away from it. Kat?
I think I'd probably give it a 3. I think that because of the nature of its sort of elements of kind of claustrophobia, it makes it quite an uncomfortable watch completely intentionally. But at the same time, the way it kind of conveys its specific atmosphere is really effective. And I think that I've seen it twice now. I've seen it at the cinema and on the small screen. And you do just enjoy kind of like these incredible frames and costumes and performances. And it is an acquired taste, but I quite like elements of sort of like long silences and space and some of the things that I worked like. I quite like that about Mad Men, for instance. I can remember seeing that for the first time thinking, oh, this is allowing quite a lot of space and silence. And yeah, so I'd give it a 3.
Helen?
Yeah, so this is the second time watching it.
Were you excited to watch it again?
I wouldn't say excited. I was very much on the fence of, can I remember enough to get away with it, or will I need to watch it again? And then I thought, oh, you know, I've got the time, I'll watch it again. But I wasn't 100% invested in it the second time round. So I'm definitely probably not going to watch it again. I think I'll go back to Jackie before I'd watch this again. So I'm going to give it a 3, just because I have seen it twice.
But one you were forced to in order to participate in this podcast episode. I don't think I'm going to watch it again. I guess never say never. I'm going to go for a 2 there. Small screen score.
Because I watched it on a medium-sized TV, I think the cinema probably would have actually been okay again with the cinematography and the score. But I think watching it on the
cinema,
the TV
would have been okay.
Yes, I think that would have hyped up that side of things. But I think, again, I wouldn't have necessarily watched it other than I chose it for this because we love the 90s. But I think it seems to work okay, and I think I'll give it a 3 because that seems to be where it looks nice, and maybe a lot of people might watch this after the Queen or King's speech at Christmas. 3:10.
Cat. Sorry, 3 was that?
3.1 to represent 3:10, because that'll be what time it's on telly.
Oh, look at that. Cat.
Yeah, I think I'd give it a 3 as well because it still looks gorgeous, but it's significantly less good than if you see it at the cinema. Like, it's just the visual elements are so strong, and that music and the kind of mounting tension, it's very good if you're properly submerged in it. It really doesn't sort of lend itself to that thing of when you're kind of sprawled on the sofa and you've got one eye on your phone. And I think it loses a lot of its power when you're watching it like that, like a lot of films do, but I think particularly ones like this, it's very good if you're properly focused on it on the big screen.
Helen?
Yeah,
3.
I think I would have liked to have seen this at the cinema. I just think that maybe the timings didn't quite work, and it kind of came out at the end of 2021 when cinema was not quite back yet then. So I missed it. And I think I probably would have enjoyed the experience and enjoyed looking at people's faces as they left on the way out, just to kind of read what their thoughts were. So yeah, I've only ever seen it on the small screen, which I think is kind of fine. So I'll give it a 4.
I think I would have quite liked to see it. I think I would have got the best, definitely, after watching this in the cinema. This and Jackie, because they are such kind of a vibe piece and the hang, I think the just being enveloped in the cinema screen does definitely help you. I was easily distracted whilst watching this. It's going to go into my engagement score, whereas I definitely wouldn't have been in the cinema. So I think it does actually lend itself quite well to a cinema score. So I'm going to go slightly lower than you guys. Well, I'm going to match Kat with a 3. Engagement score, Rich?
I'll go for 2.5. After about half an hour, I was at the point where I was thinking, okay, this needs to go somewhere. And I don't think it
after
really
did. After half an
hour,
you had 3/4 of the film still to go.
Exactly. And I kind of thought they did quite a lot in that half an hour to establish everything. And then as it went on, I was like, okay, waiting. And the only thing I was waiting to see is how it ended. I wasn't expecting it to end with a Kentucky Fried Chicken. But I think, as you say, I kind of had it on and I was following it, but I was kind of expecting to see something else. I mean, her running out in front of a load of people shooting pheasants wasn't what I was expecting, but I'll give it 2.5.
Kat?
I think I'd give it a 4. I think that it's true what Rich says about it kind of it being a very sort of slow build film, and it's not sort of one of those ones where it's sort of fast paced and you're trying to kind of get into all the intricacies of the plot, but at the same time it has this feeling to it. I think one film that influenced it quite a lot is Kubrick's Barry Lyndon, and you know that lasts about 100 years and looks kind of quite similar to this, and it's very, again, it's one of those films where some people who like Kubrick's film, they kind of think that that's one of their least favourite because it's very sort of slow in that way, and other people really like it. So it's one of these, as you said earlier, Helen, I think, you know, it's like one of these films that people kind of fall into one category or another, but yeah, I quite like slowness, so I give it a 4.
Helen?
Yeah, so this is kind of a how I've managed to average out the first time watch and then the second time watch comes in at about a 3.5, I think. It is quite long. I think it could benefit maybe with being a little bit shorter. And as we've sort of said, you don't even really get to see that much of Christmas. It's just kind of...
Yeah, that's true. Oh,
it's a shame. You kind of get the tantalising sort of edit of all the food being prepared and then you don't really get to see anyone enjoying it. And it's a bit with a scarecrow. She dances about a bit. Has a bit of a hallucination with Anne Boleyn. She goes off to her old family home and... That's kind of it, really.
It's like the Saltburn meets the royal family.
That's it. Yeah. She goes to the beach as a little trip, but yeah, that's it. Christmas is over. Like maybe the royals are just like everyone having quiet Christmases. So yeah, engagement 3.5.
So you're saying that's averaging your two viewings?
Yes.
Okay. I'm getting a bit higher because I didn't know where it was going. 3.8. Because I knew it wasn't... I was quite interested to see how the conversations would play out. And in my mind, I was kind of checking along to see if that was... I was trying to work out, is that a realistic conversation that happened or just one that's completely fictionalized and made up? And that kept me going in a way. Because like Timothy Spall's character, every time he spoke, I just kind of thought, he seems randomly harsh for what he's... But also he seemed quite kind at the end and I just couldn't get a bead on what his character was and if he's a true-to-life kind of figure. Because she seemed to be really scared by him or really... concerned by his very existence, wasn't she? So
I think he's fictional, completely fictional.
No, but what I mean, I mean the type of character, would there be like almost a person who was there, the weighing person, but also like the shush, budging you into a room, but also giving you Anne Boleyn books to encourage you? It just seemed like a really weird person. So what do you mean by that? Do you mean that he was just a ghostly apparition or
he wasn't based on a real person. So like obviously like the Queen and Charles are real and the chef is very much a real person who had quite a good relationship with Diana. But yeah, Timothy Spalls is not based on any true person.
He felt like Tim Curry in Clue.
But not that he's a ghost though. It just means he's a person that might have done those services,
but not based on anyone specific. Whereas like Maggie was based on a real person.
Was she real?
Or a ghost? She was based on a real person.
She was based on a real person. Okay, 3.8, and that gives us an overall score of 3.22500. Repeat viewing score is the main thing that let it down there, but didn't get much above the 3.5s in the rest of the categories. I think that's kind of fair. Well, Kat, Rich, can you tell us where we can find you online? And thank you very much for bringing us and say goodbye to listeners and say thank you very much to the listeners as well.
Yeah, so you can find us at Don't You Want Me podcast on all good and bad podcast apps. We're at DYWM podcast on Twitter and Instagram. And yes, come by and listen to us talk about, and maybe we'll do a Charles and Diana special one day.
Yes, I'm a big fan of Stephen Frears' film The Queen. I think that's a good one. So maybe we should do that one. Yeah, come and find us on social media. Come and say hello. And I'm... also at Kitty Costanza on Twitter and Instagram as well. So thank you so much for having us on.
Yeah, no problems at all. Please come back again soon.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the mighty people for their mighty, mighty tunes and Rockwood Audio's editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
Just heard a Stripped Media production.